Welcome to this week's episode of Creative Vets Podcast. This is the first podcast with an actual veteran who went through one of our songwriting programs. What did you think about meeting Greg Pease for the first time?
Man, I loved meeting Greg Pease for the first time. Hadn't listened to a song until today, and just a super powerful song and a super powerful story. So Greg Pease is a Marine Corps veteran. He served with Richard in Iraq. And like Richard said, he went through our songwriting program, where he really dug into, you know, some childhood trauma, his experience with homelessness, after the Marine Corps, and really just a transition and a journey to finding, mental health and, you know, finding his place in the world. And so it's a really inspirational conversation we had today.
Yeah, we didn't go, cause me, Brett knows too that this, cause we were in the writing session, like, how much Greg has actually went through. Mm-hmm. And I wish we could tell the people, but just know when you're listening to this that you can overcome anything. Like, yeah. Greg's story has proven to me that you can absolutely overcome anything. So I can't wait to get you into this episode. The first part of it is going to be very laughable. Lots of lighthearted jokes. And then we kind of go into a little bit deeper after that. But so excited for you all to meet Greg Pease. Here he is. Saying we always like to start in an awkward moment. So what were you saying? Were you just whispering to me?
No, I was gonna talk to myself during the podcast.
Bump yourself up for the podcast. You can do this, Greg. Do you do that? Do you look in the mirror sometimes? You're
absolutely
a motivational person.
I sure do.
I feel like you do some stuff to motivate yourself, do you?
I absolutely do.
Every day.
I have positive affirmations for myself.
That's awesome.
No, I really do. I don't necessarily look in the mirror, but I really believe that. I really do believe that. I know it's so cliche. I was talking to someone about it just the other day. You know, yourself being that most important sale of the day, the first sale of the day. We got to believe in ourselves and what we're doing. And I certainly take time. I mean, watch a YouTube video. I post motivational stuff, so it pops back up on my feed and I reread it from 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago and then reevaluate what does that mean for today for me.
That's awesome, because I mean, I always try to – optimism is what kept me alive this whole time. And the morning is how you set that. And that's
sets
why,
that's why
I go to the gym every single morning just to kind of get that out. But then time I come home, I just feel a little bit better before I interact with anybody. I feel so much better, and I just try to be as positive I can go in, like, the first interaction with my wife or kids, just being like, hey,
absolutely.
Sets the tone for the rest of the day.
Absolutely. I mean, because if you don't, and that workout is that first piece of accomplishment. We all kind of fiend for some type of accomplishment, and that workout was that first piece of accomplishment. And then if we don't set that tone with something positive, we're literally fighting the rest of the day to come out of that hole. So yeah, I really believe in that as well.
Well, we're here with Greg Pease.
Motivational speaker.
I know. That's a great intro into this too. Yeah, because for those who don't know, I actually served with Mr. Pease. What do you like better now that you're out of the Marine Corps? Do you still like being called Pease?
I go by Greg now.
Greg.
not even Gregory, just Greg.
Just Greg. But do you like, what do you like?
Greg. That's my preference,
okay.
For sure.
Okay, I'm just making sure, because I still like it when people call me Casper. They don't. My preference in business world is
Richard. I slip up and call you Casper
a lot.
But
when you call me Casper, I don't mind it.
Yeah. Richard's had so many different nicknames.
Yeah, I do.
I've known him as Ray Ray.
Ray
Richard,
Ray.
Casper. Richie.
They called me Richie.
They call me Richie.
I think there was more than that, too. But yeah, Ray Ray came from me childhood. I heard two conflicting stories. One was my cousin who was trying to say Richie, and then it came to like Ruri, then it came to like Ray Ray, like that's how it. But then the other one was my brother said that he saw some dude on, like, it was an old like 70s film, and this dude who just was awesome, I guess. And
it's
his name was
you.
Ray Ray, and so he started talking. So I still don't know what's true. One day I'll find out. Then it went to Ray. When I go to President Bush and they asked me what I wanted the name to be on the photo, I was like, Ray. I want to say Ray. And then split second decision in the Oval Office, about to go next because President Bush was seeing like the Marines as they came in. My buddy was in front of me. And then the guy was like, what was your name? And I was like, Richard, but it might say Ray on there. He's like, well, what name did your mama give you? And I was like, Richard. She's like, maybe you want the President of the United States saying the name that your mama gives you. Yeah. Since she's right here next to you. I was like, okay, good call. But when the photo came, it still said, so he did like, hey, Richard. But the photo came and it says Ray Casper, and I do regret that.
that's
now when
funny.
I show it, people are like, who's Ray Casper?
Ray, you have twin brothers?
I know.
That's great.
Anyways, but yeah, thanks for being here. This is cool because we actually get to highlight a veteran story who's been through one of our programs, but who's also been one of my friends for a really long time, even though we had a really long gap. Me and Greg. it's so Greg. Hard for me not to say peace.
Peace.
When you're military, when you first meet someone in the military, that's all you know. I still don't know some first names of some of the people from 2-7 and from First Toast, honestly. And so it's not until you get them on Facebook or MySpace or whatever you're on, and then you're like, oh, he actually has a first name.
We connected on MySpace.
So we first met. We first met. I don't actually think I knew you at 2-7.
I don't think so.
I was in Fox, and were you in weapons?
I was golf.
Golf? Okay, yeah. So I didn't actually know him when I was first, I got to 2-7 straight from Camp David, and I didn't meet the deployment for them, and that's why me and Jeremy were the only people that volunteered to go to the tow unit because we just wanted to go overseas before we got out.
Yeah.
And then, so we're two people who wanted to go with 18 2-7 guys who went multiple times, and just, I'm not sure if you, did you get voluntold to do
no,
it?
No, I wanted to go.
Oh, sweet. Okay. Because most of the guys I talked to.
I know, we're not so excited to be a part of that
group. Because it was their third or fourth time over.
Yeah.
So we met at the tow unit. Do you remember meeting me?
so I don't recall specifically.
I know, I can't either. I was like, wait, I think the first real interactions I had with you, because I think everyone was getting to know each other in the tow unit. First interactions I had with you was in Iraq, and then just all the stupid stuff that we used to do. I'm pretty sure I'm the one that started the peace.
Oh no, it was definitely you.
Okay, good.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah.
So Pease used to hang out with this guy named Van Bogelen, and I don't know why. I was just like, the moment it just stuck in my head, I'd just be like, Pease, Van Bogelen. And we would do, it's veterans understand this, military people understand this. We would do the stupidest games. What was the game that we did where I would just be like, so it'd be like, say, Pease and Van Bogelen and a few of these guys. And I'd be like, hey. And then Pease would be like, what? And I'd be like, Van Bogelen. I'd be like, oh, I got you. You suck.
But those, I mean, and trying to explain them, it does seem like, what are they talking about? But, those are the things that really created entertainment and camaraderie when you don't have nothing else.
Oh, yeah. It was just, you just made up these silly games. And
they were awesome.
They were awesome. I mean, I know you're probably super annoyed by the end of it because it was just, how do we get people? And then when you knew it was coming, you just wait and not just not say anything, but there become a moment where we just flip the script again. I don't know. It's a fun game. You guys should try it sometime.
You should try it.
It's just you make them feel dumb for answering you.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we had those fun times. But while we were in Iraq, I didn't know your past. I didn't know your story. I was just like, here's another 2-7 guy. He's awesome. I loved all the 2-7 guys that I came over with, even the ones I didn't know. And what was your experience like? Because we were in what squad? I was in Outlaw. What squad were you in?
Spartan, I think.
Because you were with Parker.
Parker.
Yeah, it was Spartan. Yeah. And you were with these group of guys we called Team Protein.
Team Protein.
So if you could tell the fans out there about Pease, Greg before we went and Greg after we went.
Yeah. So before. I was facing my demons. Before I left on my third deployment, I was doing fast food and beer for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I got a little sloppy before that deployment. Do you remember Gunny Zapata? He used to talk not so friendly to me.
I mean, he talked not so friendly to a lot of people, but I remember especially.
He did not like when I was out of shape. And the funny thing is, as soon as I got in shape, it was like we were friends. He had a big thing about people being in shape.
And I remember you telling me that before we went to Iraq or on the way, you said that you're like, I'm about to make a massive change. You're like, I'm really chubby and chunky right now. He's like, but you just wait until at the end of this deployment. And I didn't believe you.
No one did. I mean, yeah, no one did. I remember, Bellavia was one of the people from Team Protein. And honestly, when I first he was the most in shape guy that I knew. So I was like, hey, what are all the secrets? Of course, because people that are in shape have all the secrets. So I went to him hey, what are all the secrets? And he literally told me, he's like, dude, go to the gym. He's like, literally, he wouldn't even give me time. He's like, show up at the gym. He's like, then we can talk. And honestly, after a period of time of actually doing it and pretty probably backwards, he finally pulled me aside and was like, hey, look, let's talk. But no, I was committed. I knew I was committed for sure. I needed to make a change in my life. And honestly, it was one of the pivotal changes that forever altered the course of my life.
One of the things, I actually brought this up to Brett before we even reconnected, which was just, we just reconnected like last year. I used to tell Brett and a bunch of people the story about how I was like, if you plug your nose, you don't like really taste the food, because I was sitting across from this guy, this beast of a man who was trying to hit certain amounts of protein and food each day. And there you are across from me. I still remember it. You have all that chopped up chicken in front of you,
yeah.
And you get to the point where you're like, you can't eat anymore.
Couldn't even do it no
and
more.
All you do is you plug your nose and you just throw the rest of the food in your mouth. And I'm like, what are you doing?
What is he doing?
And you're like, this helps. If I don't smell it, I'm not going to like gag or anything. I was blown away by
just,
it.
Yeah, just sheer... and I don't know where I got it from, but I just knew that, like, hey, I got to get this done. So what do we got to do to make it happen?
And that was the one good thing about us being with Toes was it was actually a pretty good schedule when it came to,
gosh,
if you're on
yeah.
a FOB or anything like that, you have your schedule is obviously scattered. You're still working every single day, but I mean, you never know when you're going to be woken up or when you're going to be on like a 24, 46, 38 hour mission.
Right, right.
And with First Toes, we had a very 8 hour shifts. For the most part, obviously we went on a bunch of different missions.
Times, I think
we went
did like 12 EOD on 12 missions. Once or twice.
Yeah, and we did EOD missions. At least I know my squad did. I can't remember if everyone did all those different things.
Yeah,
we
yeah,
went on
yeah.
some random stuff that didn't last 3 or 4 days. But being able to, because I told people too, that's the biggest I ever got too, because I weigh like 210 now, but I was at 235 when I was in Iraq.
During deployment?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I got up to that because I would do what you were doing, but just not at your level. I would... go eat a bunch of food. I'd go work out. I would go on patrol. When I came back, I would usually eat again and then sometimes work out again and then go to like MWR and get on Facebook or whatever and then go to sleep and then wake up and just repeat, because that's all you got to
yeah,
do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't even have Facebook back then. I would just go to sleep.
That's
I literally
when I actually
ate,
it.
Slept, and work.
Yeah.
And I honestly, I mean, it was a great routine as far as routines go.
Yeah, I got Facebook over there because my grandma had it. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool.
Like, gam-gam.
She got on there so that she could talk with me. So it became that tool that everyone was using to kind of talk with their family.
Right,
since
right.
We had like 100%. One sat phone for our whole unit.
Well, and I seen something on Facebook the other day, and I couldn't even, I had to reread it. It said deployments to move forward without cell phones. I was like, do what? People are like, they're bringing cell phones on deployment?
Yeah, I actually heard even when we were over there in Baghdad, some of the people had cell phones. So I was like, what
that's
kind of
crazy.
Crap is that? That's not a deployment. I was actually, I was even mad that us in Fallujah, like that we had like Baskin-Robbins. We didn't have an actual Baskin-Robbins there, but we had like ice cream at the chow hall. And I'm sitting here thinking, I came to war thinking I was going to be at war, and I am, but why is there... this kind of dessert here, like
this kind of dessert.
I don't need this. I'm appreciative of having
yeah,
ice cream over
yeah.
there.
Weren't you also not supposed to have the ice cream?
Oh no, that was boot camp. That was boot camp. That's another funny story. Boot camp. I would get milk and like filled up halfway up, and I get vanilla ice cream.
Are you serious?
Just pour it into
oh my
the
gosh!
Cup so nobody could see
in
it.
Boot camp.
In
what
boot
is
camp.
Wrong with you?
I did a
did
lot
you,
of stuff.
Hey, did you good. Did you get caught at all or what? Did you get
no,
away with that the whole time?
Never.
Your drone instructor's listening and having a fit right now.
Oh my gosh. They're probably like, they're PTSD. I should
have. It's like,
I'm
coming back to find them.
The other thing, another funny boot camp story I think I told you, was because I was the tallest, every time you go in to get food, I mean, you're in and out as quick as possible, but they have about 60 to 80 Marines go through at once. I was always like the head of the fourth squad. And each time the squad leader or whoever would see 1, 2, 3, 4 attack chow hall or 4, 3, 2, 1 attack chow hall. And that means that your squad would go first. Whatever number they said, your squad would go first. Since I was the first guy and the fourth one, whenever it said like, 4, 3, 2, 1 attack chow hall, I'd be the first in line. So typically, even when you grab your bread, you have to remember that Marine Corps boot camp. You have to, if you get bread, you can't just pick it up. You have to two hands on top of two pieces minimum, and you had to go back and set it down. Same thing with cups. You had to have two hands holding your cups.
It was
because they're so uniform and they're so about like this discipline and just doing what they say and just all this stuff. So typically, you get your two pieces, you get down and scarf it down. I would go because everyone's still going back and forth. So the drill instructors are like watching you sit down. and all these Marines are going back and forth from, they set their tray down, they go get their bread, go back down, go get their drink, come back down, because you also couldn't carry two things at once. So people are going back and forth. So the moment I set my tray down, I'll go, usually get like three or four pieces, but squish them so it looks like two, come back down.
He's like, first of all.
I would put them down, butter them, eat them, and go back and get two more. One time, the most I ever had in one sitting, I think, was 12 pieces of bread.
That's a loaf.
How did you manage the walking and eating time in between the two minutes you had to eat?
Because I knew that if I was the first one in, there's still like
70
Marines behind me. So I would wait until, because sometimes they'd catch you if you were like, why aren't you sitting when everyone else is? So if I knew that, because I was always at that first table as they're filling up. So if like the fourth or fifth table had everyone seated, that's when I knew I was done. I was like, okay, I can't get up for anything else. Or I'm gonna get busted.
It was well calculated.
I gained 20 pounds in boot camp. Most people
lost weight.
I gained like 20 pounds in boot camp.
Like there's a shortage of white bread.
The bread was the hot commodity. That's what you had to keep going back
because
to get.
I just needed that energy because there was nothing else. Because even, oh, and I love ketchup. I don't know if you knew this about me. I used to tell us.
I want to hear this.
I used to love ketchup. Like it was insane the amount of love I had for ketchup. The angriest I've ever been in boot camp was, it was Friday, so it was burgers.
They're out of ketchup.
And I go and they have the packets, and I have like, I'm like, okay, I'll be, you know, modest. I'll get five packets. I know I go there, and at the end of the line, you know, they actually have a drill instructor check your tray at the end of the line, and he looks at it. He takes like four of those packets and throws them out, and I just have like one, and I'm just sitting here like,
yeah. You're like, we should fight over this.
To break in Marine Corps boot camp, it was that moment.
That's funny.
Anyways, okay, I have stories for days. Let's go back to Greg.
Hey, that's hilarious.
Oh, I love those stories. I actually have a segment I want to do with you about that. So maybe let's jump into that real quick. Is there a funny, and this could be either boot camp or Iraq. What's like the funniest, because everyone talks about like the darkest or what happened to them bad, but is there something kind of like those stories that just kind of sticks out to you that was just like so funny to you at the time, whether it's boot camp or Iraq?
So when I may have even like partially told you this before, did I ever tell you that I did boot camp twice?
No, you didn't.
So is this story worthy? Does everyone want to hear this?
Yes.
You overachiever. Okay, like everyone definitely wants to hear. So and then again, like you kind of touched on a little bit about the childhood thing. So I ran away roughly when I was 10 years old, and I joined the Marine Corps from a group home. I didn't really have much guidance, figured that out since then. But so going through boot camp, went to the range week. After we got back from there, you know, you have to do like no brass trash, live ammunition, pat down, all that, you know, spread them and all that. So, you know, I accidentally, like a day or two later, may have been later that day, I had a round in my cargo pocket. And so I didn't intentionally take it off, but I thought this was the coolest thing ever. So I was going to mail it to someone. I mean, I didn't really have.
So you're talking about like the brass from the
projectile,
bullet?
Yep. the whole projectile.
Oh, the whole thing?
No, I had a bullet.
I had a bullet.
I was trying to be a military spec in my terminology. I had a bullet. So I mailed this thing out. Don't mail bullets. Don't do that. Don't just put it in an envelope. It doesn't work.
Oh
so,
my gosh.
But like somewhere, I don't know. I mean, I was well into the. I mean, I was well later in the game when all this comes to a head, and they were gonna just kick me out. And I was like, oh my God, like I'll be homeless. Like, what do we need to do? And they talked and such. And so I got sent back to phase one with another group. So
Because of the bullet?
Oh yeah. Instead of that was in lieu of kicking me out. They sent me back pretty much like today, like 12 in boot camp or something. So, but honestly, like the first, you know, as you know, like the first go around, it's like that mental, like it's like 90%. So the second go around, like you're going to die in the gas chamber. I'm like, we won't. Live through it once.
That's awesome. You became like Papa Bear.
Yeah, we're good. It's going to be snotty. We're not going to die. yeah. So I did a majority of boot camp two times that happened.
That's crazy. That's not awesome, but that's still like it's funny now to look.
Yeah.
At.
Oh yeah.
Because I remember
it was
like,
horrible when that happened.
Knowing that people rolled back even like 3 weeks, and I was just like, "There's no way.
There's no way."
But
yeah.
Again, I was in that mental state where it's just this is the worst thing on earth.
Yeah, I did upwards of five and a half months on the island.
Hey, but at least they didn't take your ketchup away.
Yeah. They could have took four packets of ketchup from you. Fair enough. I didn't go through that, so.
So after Iraq, I didn't know your childhood story. And then we ended up writing a song through the Kravitz program about that. But when I learned that, actually before I learned that, we got reconnected because of a Team Protein member,
Kirk. Yeah.
And he's a hometown friend of mine who I went to boot camp with, same time frame. I guess not with. I think he was a few behind me. But he called me up one day. So we got out of the Marine Corps. I got out in July 2007. When did you end up getting out? Right after that?
No, I did eight. I re-enlisted.
Oh, you did?
In Iraq.
Oh, okay.
So I got out in January of 2011.
Okay. Yeah, so we disconnected. Obviously, you didn't see me since 2007.
Yeah.
I followed you I think you did have social media for a little bit in the beginning, maybe? Did you?
If
not?
I did, I wasn't managing it. I may have tried to set up an account and I wasn't managing but nonetheless, yeah.
Because that's typically how I'd keep up with people. It's like we didn't talk, but I just knew where people were kind of like around.
Yeah.
And then I haven't heard from you forever. I've told stories about you, like the eating thing and stuff, to Brett many a times. And then I get this call from my friend. He was worried about the new like gun bills and taking away guns in Illinois for mental health issues, and he has PTSD. Anyways, he called me about it. Then he asked, just randomly said, "And I bet like you hanging out with Pease at all?" And I was like, "Wait, no. Why would you say that?" He's like, "He's in Nashville." Like, wait, how long has he lived in Nashville? Then I kind of got upset because I was like, "How does Pease not know I'm in Nashville?
How does Pease not know I'm here?"
But it makes way more sense if you're not on social media and stuff, or weren't very active and you didn't have me on there. Because I was like, "We're making a stand here. Like everyone should know we're in Nashville. Everyone who I served with."
Yeah.
So then he gave me your number and we contacted, and I was just, man. And
timing couldn't have been better when you contacted me too. It was such a great time. I mean, I was really, and I'm sorry to dive in, So I was even, up and down and as I develop and progress on my journey. But when you met me, I was really facing some demons and stuff, and hearing about your program, I was super excited. And writing my song, which we were talking about a little bit over a year ago, it was one of the most freeing things to the words that I put in that song. It was one of the most freeing things I've done in my life. Like, I feel so like I don't even really like a couple people I've shared that song with, like just a couple of people, and no one else has to hear it. And it was so validating, so liberating that I got to say it. Like, my voice was heard. This is what I said is what it is.
That's awesome, because I explain to people, every veteran who comes through program, I say, this song is either just for you, or it's for everyone, or it's for middle ground, or maybe you think it's for you and then you send it to people afterwards. I was like, the only thing is, you need to know that there's a safe place to get this out, and then you're legitimately, instead of compartmentalizing these thoughts and these experiences in your own body, you get to take them out, put it into a song, and now that's your compartment, which is away from you.
100%.
And you know that you'll never lose it, that you can always go back to it, that you'd always share it if you wanted to. So it's good, because most veterans are like, no, share my song. But I keep telling them, like, I want you to go as deep as possible, because I almost don't want you. I want you to go so deep you don't even have to share your song because it's for you. It's so deep 100%, and personal for you.
And I revisit that song still myself, and it literally is, I love every single part of that song. It literally empowers me. I mean, the song is, so the title was, Forgave You For Me. And it's almost a reminder sometimes, like if I ever have challenging thoughts against my forgiveness, I have to remember myself, like, it was for me. Like, I can't give up on myself at this point. And that song is a reminder on that.
That's the thing. Brett's been in, how many rights have you been in with veterans?
Oh, probably close to 20.
And I've been in like 85 of them. And yours is the deepest. There's been war songs that have been deeper on the war version of it, like
absolutely,
what they've seen
absolutely.
And what has happened
100%.
To them. But yours is the most raw, real, deepest. I'm always almost sad that people can't hear it, but I'm also like still glad that you got it out there. Because nobody will be able to relate to it unless they've been in your shoes. They can relate to the forgiveness thing. Like, we still wrote it in a way that people would get something out of it for
100%.
Forgiveness. But this one is so you. And
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Like, I learned so much from you. It was an intense rite for us to be a part of, because most of this is, I can relate to almost anything someone's went through in war. I cannot relate to the childhood stuff. And I encourage veterans to write about the thing that's the worst thing, the thing that's holding them back the most, and it doesn't have to be war. I know most likely that's what affects you when you're at war. There's like a famous quote from an admiral that says, war makes a good man great and a bad man worse. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that is built on, like, you could have took what happened to you as a child, went to war, and it could have made you 100 times worse.
Absolutely.
But you did the other thing, and you went and made something out of it. I mean, when you first got out, though, you said you did go homeless, right?
I did. Yeah, it was a real... just being honest, and even like I even, you know, make jokes about it sometimes, not to say that Marines make dark humor.
Oh, we do.
But I didn't know how to take care of myself as a 26-year-old grown man. I've been institutionalized from the time I was, you know, double digits, you know, from I was 10, 11 years old. So, and then getting out of the Marine Corps, they don't keep paying you on the 1st and 15th. The check stops. So I had to figure that out. It was a very, very rough time. It was a very rough transition getting out, but truly that it could have went, you know, it could have went either way, but it really allowed me to get in tune with myself and who I am and determine what my true north is. And once I was able to post that flag, I can now live free, and my village of people appear around me if they're interested in my true north.
That's all. And we're going to talk about like you're overcoming all this stuff in a minute, but I also want to, Brett, like from your experience from that writing session as a writer and just as an overall experience, obviously, we're not getting into detail about what we talked about because, again, it's P's song, but you could still obviously forgiveness his childhood. Greg. Every time I say it, I'm just going to be like, Greg. It's Greg's song. Then you'll want me to call you P's. But yeah, what do you get out of that? Because I know we've talked about this multiple times, just being like, P's song, like P's, like Greg's song. Greg's song.
Greg.
Well, I mean, that's what's great about songwriting is that as a songwriter, I'm not judging anything that's coming out of his mouth. I'm just, what does he say? And that's going through me into like the laptop, into the lyrics. So then I think that's a great thing about songwriting is that it's not a therapy session as far as like a counselor. Like, you tell me what's wrong with you, I'm going to tell you what to do to solve it.
Right.
You're telling me what you want to talk about, and I'm just kind of like,
here's how you may be able to paint the picture. Yeah,
yeah. Repackaging it back to you. And I think that's what's really the power in the songwriting room.
Yeah, because I'm not sure if you were totally up for forgiving this family member. If you, I'm not sure if you remember if you wanted to just do it for you, but then in the session, was there anything, if you could remember this session, do you remember at any time coming to realization that like, okay, I am now, I was just saying it before, not believing it, but now I just put it out there, so I really am.
Yeah, so absolutely. There was at the end, I mean, honestly, the last words that are said in the song, you know, when that was presented as essentially as an option for the song, you remember we actually took a break and actually had to think about it.
Yeah.
But making that decision to put that in there, that was, you know, that was really that piece, like you said, like that I was totally at peace with this. This could go in this song, and it's okay because I have forgiven.
Did you know what you wanted to write about when you came in? And do veterans who come to the program generally know what their song's going to be about? Or did it come to you kind of in the session?
Yeah, I'm going to go with absolutely did not know. Yeah. And I feel like most veterans probably don't know when they show up, and they don't need to know. And they even generally speaking, and when I say they, I mean, I definitely am speaking for myself. I've gotten to be a mentor a few times. I don't have 18 or 85 under my belt, but maybe like four. But speaking for myself, you know, even maybe having an idea when I went to that room, because I do like the whole motivational side of helping other people. It does help re-empower me. And so when I showed up that day, I was like, oh, let's write a song about motivating other people that they can keep going. When we got done that song, it was pretty solely for me.
We tee them up like on the calls too, because I think you even said you had like two separate ideas, and we talk a little bit about the forgiveness, but you didn't go into detail about what it was. And that's what we always do too. We will do our phone calls with the veterans and just be like, here's what happened to me, what happened to you, and then say, well, we're going to write a song about either something that you don't want to talk about to other people, or that you do want to share with other people, that you want to scream from the rooftops, really ultimately what you need to say, and just build off that. But when we went in, but most of the time when we go in there, it's still kind of up in the air on what that was specifically. Some veterans are like, I know exactly, I pinpointed this process and what I need to talk about, here it is, and we just work off that. But almost every single writing session we've ever been in, it's always changed just a little bit, because the realization while you're in there, you're hearing your own words come back from us
in different
ways. So it's like you're putting yourself, now it's not you Like, you're not remembering it from your first perspective. You're actually seeing it now third person, because you're seeing this brought together almost like if you were outside of it.
When we're building our own story, I think, and I say we are definitely speaking for myself, we're so critical of ourselves. We can't even allow ourselves to get to step two or step three because step one wasn't good enough. And when we hear it back, and I mean, you guys have some amazing songwriters. When we hear it back, it does validate what happened, and then empowers us, because we're like, oh my God, that's amazing. Let's keep building the story. But singular by ourselves, you know, we're not even really able to. We're so critical. We're not even aware that we're not allowing ourselves to build the story out as it is.
What kept you going? Like, back to the idea of this. Vendors just need to know that you can go through almost anything and be successful. But what kept you going even through childhood, like still being in a family situation before you even went to the other system? And then what kept you going from that stage into the Marine Corps? And then what kept you going from that stage? Is there anything consistent, or is it just mere determination? What is that? What is it for you that?
Yeah, that's a really fair question. And I really wish I had a direct answer to it. I've always felt like there was, truthfully, it would have been easy to give up as a child. I always felt like that there was something more in that, you know, like no matter what was going on at that moment, that at some level I had to endure this to get to the next, and there was always better coming. And, yeah. I always felt that way at some level subconsciously.
What it is right there. And that's what's awesome is you do have something. It's that. It's always going to get better from here. It's most people, you were at rock bottom as a child, which nobody should ever have to go through, but you still thought, well, it only gets better,
how can it get worse, right?
It does.
Like, right, and it has.
And
it has.
In your case, it does. Like with my story, like I come from poor family and all that stuff, and so I had a kind of a rough childhood-ish, but I still had family that loved me, and I knew that I was going to do something better. I wasn't trying to get out of a bad place, if that makes sense.
Right.
And then I hit rock bottom, obviously, after Iraq. So I went from like being way up here to down to back up. And my saving grace was just optimism, because I always said, well, why can't I do this? Once I was Correct. Injured, I said, well, why can't I find a new way to do this? But for you, it was, hey, it always gets better from here. And I like these different perspectives, because we have all different types of veterans who hear this. And they may not have any optimism left in them, but they could think, well, yeah, actually, it could only get better from here, because...
I always felt like, and I don't know if any, you know, other people, someone might be aligned with it. There's definitely, of course, there's people that have been through even crazier stuff. My story is pretty crazy. And I felt like, you know, at some level we've been through too much to give up at this point. Like like you said, starting at, you know, no one should have to, but you know, starting out so early on at rock bottom, like knowing that, you know, it's like, if I didn't give up there, like we can't give up. I've heard you say before, mention about, in whether it be in the business world or whatever the case may be, you know, you're not, I'm going to butcher your words, but you made mention that, you know, we're not going to die today. So the decision ain't that hard.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of like that same mindset. We've been through so much. This can't be the thing that breaks me. It has to be harder than something else that we've already done. Like, there's no way we can let this be the thing that breaks me. And then the other piece is truly that if you know, we made it this far, I really want to be able to, at whatever capacity, whenever the time comes, whatever I'm called to, much like yourself and Creative Vets as an organization, you know, when the time is right, I want to be available to give back to those one chapter behind.
And you have been giving back too, like you mentioned, you're a mentor. So what we do is that, obviously we know it's not sustainable to be the mentor for every single veteran that comes. And as we expanded our team, but we also expanded into having mentors. So veterans who've written through the process, and then now they're helping other people. So has that process of sitting down with these veterans helping, now you went through it and now you're helping veterans kind of get over that hump, and you get to see them how I saw you, is you come in down and you're trying to get this out, then after being very kind of excited about,
absolutely,
even, it's the worst thing that's ever happened to you, but you're excited about it,
absolutely,
because it's for you and it's something that you were able to accomplish. How does that feel with these other veterans now?
I mean, the feeling is, it you know, selfishly it feels great. But it truly does continue to help my process and my journey, through, what, everything that I'm telling them, my ears are hearing me say.
Yeah.
So, you know, my subconscious mind is buying in through, me telling myself while I'm telling them. And it's definitely, like I said, I tell the veterans every time I get an opportunity to mentor, I will selfishly take that opportunity.
That's awesome, because I still tell people today that like any traumatic situation that causes PTS, and this is civilians and veterans, it's like that's always going to be there no matter how much stuff that you do, but it's like a race. So the moment that happens, you're kind of like you're racing. And most of the time when we started, you know, PTS was winning. Like here's right, this. And right. So we get anxieties, depression, and all this stuff.
It gets heavier.
And as
and heavier.
We help ourselves, we pass it.
Then it gets
and we
lighter
get
and
really,
lighter.
Really far ahead. But then there comes a point to where for me, art and music and helping veterans was keeping me way ahead. But when I started diving into more of the administration part of Creative Vets and trying to advance our cause and do all these meetings and fundraisers, and I stopped writing with veterans and doing art, it started catching back up to where I started kind of becoming recluse again. And mm-hmm. like I started mm-hmm. feeling it. I was intentional about understanding why now.
Yeah,
and so
right,
then it forced me to start doing stuff. But I just want people out there to know that you could easily conquer this, but it is
correct.
Always catching up to you. So don't be complacent about it.
100%.
Because by you going through that first process, the songwriting, yeah, it gets you above and you're passing it now. But after a year, I mean, it may catch up again. So to throw you in with these mentors, it's not selfish. It's just making sure that you're staying ahead. And that's how I stay ahead too. I always say if it wasn't for Creative Vets, I wouldn't be here, because this is what's keeping me ahead.
Correct. You have to stay one step ahead so you can continue to provide for that one chapter behind. No, that's really powerful, and it has helped me. I mean, I only wrote that song, you know, just a little bit over a year ago, and I've already been to a second Creative Vets program, and then roughly speaking, done 4 or 5 mentors just in that last year, and it definitely has helped me. You know, that first one, you know, is really that octane to get that boost to get ahead. And then each one of these programs moving forward or mentorships is that opportunity to stay ahead. And it definitely, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you said that.
Thank you. I always like compliments.
Tell me more.
Words of affirmation, please tell me more about me. Just kidding. But now, what's Greg's story now? Like, you wrote the song, you're doing, I mean, I think you're killing it now. I mean, I see you all over. Now you are using the social media as
I am, yeah.
Part of your job, but I know that you're getting into even inspirational speaking and leadership and your own, are you doing your own web series now too or something? Pitch anything that you're doing, just because it's important for any veterans to, or even if it's not out yet.
Yeah, so that's
that
a big thing. It's not, nothing. We're still, I mean, who knows? I mean, inspirational speech and if you, speaking and if you will, success coaching. And, you know, it'll just be a continuous journey until it is to some form of fruition. But I tell people the analogy I use is like if you've never seen a unicorn and someone's like, hey, there's a unicorn around the corner. Of course, you're going to say, no, there's not. And then they're like, no, for real. It's right around the corner. And let's say you kind of go peek. And you don't see it. And you're like, no, it's not over there. I looked. And they're like, no, trust me. You got to go all the way. And then one day you decide you're going to go all around the corner because I'm going to prove that there's no unicorn. And you walk around there and lo and behold, there's a unicorn. After that, it's like, you got to tell everyone, if I got to drag them over there and show them the unicorn, it's real. That's how I feel. That's where I'm at in my journey around the motivational speaking and such. Like, I seen the unicorn. Like, there was a time where I lived so far on the other side of the spectrum, you couldn't have gotten me to believe that unicorn was there. And now I've seen it. So it's like, it's a mission. Like, I have to show up to be like, it's really, it's there. We got to do it.
That's why I'm actually super pumped. When you told me that you're going into this realm, I called you. Remember, I texted you
right away.
Said, hey,
right
I want to talk to you. I'm a part of Speakers Bureau. I want to help you with whatever, because I feel like your story needs to be heard. And it just resonates with children, with veterans, with anybody who's struggling. Like, you can't come from talking to you and being like, oh, wait, my life's pretty decent. And if he could do this, I could do this and all that stuff. So, if it's, and Pease is spelled P-I-H-S, so
yep,
it's yep. Greg Pease. Do you have, is it GregPease.com
yep,
right now?
Yep, GregPease.com, yeah.
Okay, cool, because I want people to go. And I have a request, too. I want to, for one, we're going to try to find a little, we're going to get your permission now to play a small clip of the song. We're not going to play the whole song. We're going to find something in there that's good, just so people get a little taste, probably just like the hook
absolutely.
Part of it.
Yeah, absolutely, no, absolutely.
And then also, can we use your, that little do, like the intro part, can we use that as our podcast sound, as our transition point?
That'd be exciting, absolutely.
Because we want to.
Absolutely.
Use it.
We already used it in the Amazon commercial.
We use it. That's where I got, like, seeing it on the Amazon commercial and just that little, because we want, and so everyone, you already heard him say yes, but if you heard the do come in right before we start talking, you knew he said yes before he said yes. When I asked that question, you knew he said yes.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for coming out. Unless, I mean, Hannah, do you have any more questions for
Greg? No, I was just going to say it's, you know, awesome to hear. I got to listen to the song before we came in today, and just the journey that you've taken is super inspirational. And for me, a civilian, I think it's great for anyone to hear, especially people who have veterans in their lives, loved ones. You know, it's important to hear some of the advice you've given about running the race and keeping engaged and how strong community is in healing as well. So really awesome.
Absolutely.
Glad to talk to you today.
I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for coming out and sharing your story. And we'll maybe we'll have you back in the future once you launch this website too.
Yeah.
Launch the other stuff that you're doing.
Well, that'd be exciting. And I appreciate being here today.
Well, thanks so much. We're going to sign out now. Peace. Does the truth set me free? Do I turn the other cheek? It's true that I forgave you, but I forgave you for me. It's true that I forgave you, but I forgave you for me.
Wow, what a great episode. Super powerful story that Greg has. While you guys were talking, I was over here scribbling down some notes for our civilian listeners. What's brass trash?
That's what I love about having you here too. It's because we talk all the time in encrypted language. And for us, I mean, at first I was even confused how he said brass trash, which typically is just the brass that falls to the ground. So
the casing.
Every time we shoot, we have to pick up brass. We do police call, which is, again, that is us actually picking up where we get online and we walk and we pick up anything on the ground. Even if it's not brass at that point, we're just cleaning up the ranges. So we just call it brass trash.
Got it.
Yeah, he was actually talking about a legitimate bullet. That's why I questioned it, too. I was like, wait, did you just send the brass? He's like, no, I sent the actual bullet. I was like, oh, my gosh, yeah, don't do that.
Awesome. And, yeah, he was talking about boot camp and range week, and I'm just wondering, how long is boot camp for the Marine Corps?
Yeah, so Marine Corps is 3 months. It's different than all – it's the longest of all the branches. And then for me, when I got in, we were – and I'm not sure what it looks like now, but they split it up into – three different separate things. For me, it was 4 weeks, 4 weeks, 4 weeks. And that meant when I went to MCRD for 4 weeks, it was a lot of just – that's where they really break you down mentally and you're doing a lot of different stuff. The other 4 weeks, the next 4 weeks, was range week. It was when we went to Camp Pendleton and we did a lot of the actual infantry stuff. We shot – that was the first time we had like our hands on the guns. And then we came back for 4 weeks and we did a lot of drill discipline stuff. His might have been a little bit different depending on when he went in, because it used to be like a six-week thing, a four-week thing, and a two-week thing. The reason that they switched it from that 6-4-2 was because we have to do something called the Crucible at the end of our time at Camp Pendleton. And this is where you would become a Marine. So you're there for 3 months, but once you do the Crucible, it's a three-day event where it's – I mean, it's just horrible. It's you're living on like three meal rations for the three full days, and you're up – you probably average like an hour to two a night of sleep. And it's just – you're constantly moving. You're just putting your body – if you make it through that, you become a Marine. They actually moved it to the four-week because too many Marines were getting injured so close to graduation from boot camp.
Oh,
so
wow.
If you did it on that – where you only have 2 weeks left, some Marines never actually got to go to the fleet because they're still injured.
Yeah.
So they're like, let's give them a two-week buffer. But that was just a prototype. So honestly, I don't even know if it's back to that way or not.
Wow, the Crucible. It sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
So how do you get rolled back? You talked about some people like would get rolled back 3 weeks. Is it they're just meeting the standards?
So yeah, there's a ton of different ways to get rolled back. Some people, we had this dude try to escape boot camp.
What?
And so yeah, I mean it's intense. They don't let you leave. He tried, we don't have any of our stuff. When we first get to boot camp, they box up anything you came in, your running shoes, your shirt, your shorts, everything, and they just put it away. So you only have green on green. You do have a white shirt because it's your like for your dress uniforms. And so this guy thought, you know, I'll put on a white shirt and then green shorts and I'll just go out and it'll be like I'm a civilian. But at Camp Pendleton, the base next to it, and this is something you don't know when you're coming in as a Marine, you don't know that there's there's all the Marines live off base. You just think I'm in boot camp. You don't understand. So he goes to Oceanside where all it is Marines. And someone sees him eating at a Denny's and they come up to him and he's like, are you from?
He made it all the way to Denny's?
Yeah. And they busted him and brought him back. And so he has to get set back a few weeks, which just means he has to redo some stuff or he just goes back to the time where he ran away. Wait. Most of the time you get bumped back a few weeks because each week is something very specific.
You escape boot camp. Is your first stop Denny's?
Honestly, any real food. Yeah, any place that has ketchup would be my first stop.
Awesome. He also mentioned MWR, another acronym.
Yeah, MWR is, I mean, we know it as that acronym, but I didn't honestly know until I looked it up what it actually meant, but it's Moral Welfare and Recreation. And that's because when I was in Iraq, it was the only place where you had communication with the outside world. You can go in there and they'd have a bunch of DVDs that you could just put in. They'd have certain movie nights. Then they have a bank of phones and then a bank of computers. So you'd have to sign up for time to get on a computer. You could only be on there for 30 minutes or an hour or whatever it was. As long as nobody was there, you could be on there. They'd have a few video games in the back corner. So you can go in there and play like PlayStation 3 or you can go watch a movie. And it was the only recreation you would actually have.
Mm. Got it.
Is that it?
I think so.
Sweet. Yeah, that was a short one. If anybody else has any questions, they can always email us at info@creativeevents if there's something that we did miss.
info@creativeevents.org.
.org. We talked about this, Brett. creativeevents.org. So I'll catch you all later. Bye.